Episode number 3 of Road Trekking, the RV Podcast.
Tom Hopkins, Davenport, Iowa, calling to tell everybody how much I enjoy Mike Wendland's all-new Road Trekking Lifestyle Podcast. Holy smokes, is that ever neat. It's become a big part of my day listening to Mike and Jennifer and everybody and where all they've been, where all they're going. It's just almost as good as being there. So thank you so much for what you do. We do really enjoy it very much.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
I am Mike Wendland, and welcome back. This is a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle. Now, whether you have a small motor home like the Road Trek Jennifer and I travel in, a big RV, a fifth wheel, a pop-up, heck, even if you dry camp out of your car or tent, and are just thinking about getting an RV, this show is for you. We talk about getting out there, about enjoying God's creation, about meeting interesting people and exploring the countryside, sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right, using the right gear and technology to enhance our camping and RV experience. That's what Road Trekking is all about, the RV lifestyle. Well, we are delighted to be back. This is Wednesday, October 15th, and we are out for another run. This is when we release these new episodes every Wednesday, and we are delighted that you are a part of this one. We are looking forward to covering a lot of interesting stuff. And by the way, before we go any further, thank you for the incredible response, for all the reviews that you guys left on the Apple iTunes site for podcasting. Thank you for that. Please do so if you can. It really helps us to get the podcast out there and distributed. If you leave a review and give it a star rating and say something about it, we appreciate it. Also, thank you for those of you who listen to us on Stitcher. That's a great app for listening to podcasts. Great response. You've all been so encouraging, and we're really delighted to be doing this. This is a lot of fun, and I hope you're enjoying as much as we are. Before I go any further, let me tell you that this episode of Road Trekking the RV Podcast is sponsored by Van City RV, located in the center of America and specializing only in Class B motorhome sales and service, and the Good Sam Club and Camping World, the best friends an RVer can have. Now, in this edition today, we're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk, first of all, about a very controversial but attractive subject for RVers who are on their way from point A to point B. We're talking about overnight parking, free overnight parking, boondocking, day camping, dry camping, however you want to call it. Folks who don't pay a cent and get a place to stay overnight. I'm going to talk about that for some length here in a minute, and we're going to talk with Jennifer, and she's going to join me today to answer a question we get a lot about what is all this cost? What's this lifestyle cost? And so what we did, we just returned from a trip, and she's going to share our finances with you, the bottom line cost of a typical RV trip. Now, not a big, long project, but a typical one. And we'll answer a bunch of reader questions that have come in through the special link that we have on the blog. If you go to roadtrekking.com, you can leave us a question. Just click that leave a voicemail thing. We've got a lot of questions and some comments that we'll pass along. And we're going to meet a woman later on in the podcast who is touring America and literally working out of a different city every day thanks to her small motor home that she lives in. Interesting lady. We'll meet her. So there you go. Well, we're back from a week on the road. Jennifer and I have been traveling. We just went through 5 states. And by the way, if you can get away this coming weekend, this should be peak color in much of America, particularly those places that have a lot of hardwoods. We just drove down from our home in Michigan down to the Georgia-Florida border area there in southwest Georgia. And all the way down Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee, just some spectacular color. It was just starting to get peak. I would guess most of the country will see peak colors this coming weekend. So if you get a chance, head down there and take a look at it. Beautiful color. So as we talk, I want to discuss a couple of things. And that is, I think a lot of us are unaware, a lot of RVers are unaware that there is a real battle going on out there in the RV world. And it pits some pretty powerful interest against those who don't like to have to pay for services they don't need and only want to take advantage of the generous offers of places like Walmart or Cabela's or Cracker Barrel and other businesses that not only allow but welcome brief overnight stays by traveling RVers. For more than a decade, you may not know this, for more than a decade now, campground owners and their national association have quietly been working behind the scenes to convince local governments all across North America to enact anti-RV ordinances that ban overnight camping in anything but a campground. Now, you've probably seen that. You maybe wanted to stay in a Walmart someplace, and you find out that while Walmart usually welcomes, by corporate policy, welcomes RVers, in some places they're not allowed to let them stay there. This is because thousands of places around North America have passed anti-RV ordinances, and more are doing so every day. Now, before I go any further, I want to point out something. I'm not anti-campground, and I think the world of campgrounds. I use them all the time. We've just spent two nights in them, and we'll talk about that, and we love campgrounds. But what I do object to are discriminatory laws and local ordinances that prohibit traveling RVers from overnighting in places like rest areas, Walmart parking lots, other places like that. I'm not talking about setting up camp, you know, about bringing out the barbecue or pulling out the chairs, starting a campfire in a parking lot of a Walmart. I'm talking about just spending a few hours, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours sleeping overnight before you hit the road again and on your way somewhere else. Now, we do that whenever we can. Often we're on our way to maybe a campground. We're going to stay several days, but we want to get there. It's going to take us a couple days, and overnight parking is what we choose. Let me just tell you this again. Overnight parking is not camping. It's parking. And lots of places welcome us. Again, Walmart corporate policy is to allow overnight RV parking. Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, was a big-time RVer. And very astutely, he realized that RVers who overnighted in his parking lot came in the next morning, bought groceries and supplies from his stores. But their corporate policy is trumped when a local ordinance bans overnight parking. And as we have dug into this, we have encountered some pretty powerful players aligned against free overnight parking behind those RV anti-RV laws. The biggest is the 3,000-member National Association of RV Campgrounds. I came across a 2011 report from a site that at one point had a database of all the places in the country that were against RV parking. And they pointed out that one of the stated missions of ARVC, ARVC, the Association of RV Campgrounds, is to influence legislators and city councils to institute or enforce parking bans in public places where RVs would otherwise be welcome. They urge and they assist their members to pressure their towns to prohibit parking at public places so that RVers have no choice but to stay at a nearby campground. And, you know, some of these bans, they extend to temporary street side parking in cities. And not only has this resulted in the denial of the right of private property owners to determine who can use or enjoy their property, but it has, you know, it's eroded our basic freedom to choose. So anyway, this is just a big deal. So why am I bringing this up? Because people always say, well, where did you stay? And as often as we can, when we are just on the road heading someplace, I will try and find a place where we can stay overnight. Sometimes it's a rest area. Sometimes it is a Walmart. Sometimes it is a Cabela's or a Cracker Barrel. Sometimes it's not. Now, I don't always like it. And when I tell you about the trip we just took down to Georgia, we stayed in campgrounds both ways in. Why did I do that? Well, it cost me a lot of money. I don't need hookups. I have a Road Trek E-Trek. It has plenty of onboard power. It's got some solar chargers. It's great. But I stayed the first night in Corbin, Kentucky at a KOA. I love KOAs. I find KOAs have a consistent cleanliness standard. They're usually very easy to get in and out, very friendly people who run them. And we stayed at the one in Corbin, Kentucky, going down last week. It was a great place. Why did I stay there and pay close to, I think it was $40 almost by the time I got my little KOA discount card? Why did it cost me $40? Well, I spent that money willingly because we had been traveling all day, my wife and I, and our Norwegian Elkhound, Ty. And Ty needed a walk. He'd been a good boy in that in the RV as we'd driven and driven and driven. And so I wanted to get some exercise for him and for me. And this was a great spot. There was a nice area to walk around in the campground. They had a big area for pets to run around in. So gladly, I spent that $35, $40 so that we could exercise the dog and Jennifer and I could take a nice walk. Gladly did that. Coming back, I did the same thing. Stayed at the Kentucky Horse Park. And by the way, if you've never been there in north of Lexington, Kentucky, off I-75, the Kentucky Horse Park is an incredible place. Great place, great campground, right next to probably the country's premier horse area. They have a lot of shows, a lot of national champions, a lot of thoroughbreds you can tour. But anyway, that's not where we go there. We like to kind of look at the horses and stuff. But again, I do that because it's a great place for a dog. I take my dog for a long walk at the Kentucky Horse Park, all around this big 200 plus site camping area, and they've got lots of space all around it. And he loves it. In fact, he thinks he owns the place, thinks it's his place. So I am not against campgrounds, but I do think that we should have the option to be able to take advantage of businesses that offer us free camping. So what do you do? You want to go someplace. I want to offer you up a couple of pretty nice options, pretty nice things that you can take advantage of. Okay. First thing is, if you are really trying to save some money as you're going, I want to tell you about a site called boondockerswelcome.com. If you go to the roadtrekking.com blog, there's a link for them down there and you can click on it. And this is a site in which, people who have property, maybe you've got some room on your lot or at the back of your farm or wherever it is, and they invite other RVers to spend the night there free. Sometimes there's hookups. Most of the time there isn't. You just dry camp. You have a nice, quiet, safe place in somebody's neighborhood. And Boondockers Welcome has a map. You can see people, whatever, where you're going. Just give them a call. Say, hey, I'm coming through. Is it okay if we stay? And many times you'll find yourself in one of the nicest spots that you can imagine anywhere. So Boondockers Welcome is one place you can find to stay absolutely free. And the other place is a website called overnightrvparking.com. And that is a place where you can check on a map and the area that you're going in, and it will tell you whether there's a Walmart or a Cracker Barrel or a Cabela's or what businesses or what communities, maybe a city park, where you're allowed to spend the night free in your RV. Overnight parking, overnightrvparking.com and boondockerswelcome.com. If you go to roadtrekking.com, the blog, and look at the show notes here for this episode, you will find it. I will put a link on there so that you can see both of those sites, check them out. And if you go to any of them, tell them that Road Trekking sent you. You often will get a special discount or something from it. So there you go. Dry camping, overnight camping, boondocking, the big controversy. You might tell me how you feel about it. I would love to see what you say. Just give us a call and see what you think. You can leave us a voice message.
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com. The small motorhome RV travel blog.
Well, like I said, we just returned from a trip down to Southwest Georgia. We do this, I bet a half dozen times a year. Jennifer and I both need grandkid fixes. We got a couple of grandkids up in Michigan, and we also have four grandsons down in Southwest Georgia where my son Scott and his family live. And so we're down there a lot. All four of them have been very active in sports. And right now we've got three of them that they're playing various sports, from baseball to football. Can you believe it? They're still playing baseball down there. Anyway, we went down last week right after the podcast, and we had took the road truck down. I told you where we stayed at a KOA on the way down, and then coming back at the Kentucky Horse Park. But we went down to watch a couple of our grandkids play sports. And I thought that you might get a kick out of this because here's yet another reason why the RV lifestyle is so much fun. Now, my son is not a camper. His boys would like to do a little bit more, and sometimes we can take him with us. But most of the time when we're down there, we do bring our RV. We stay with them in their house while we're there. But we do indeed use the RV. So let me show you how. Let's open up the RV and you can meet my grandkids.
Okay, let's go in. Come on in, boys. So I'm down in Southwest Georgia, and this is two of my four grandsons. What's your name?
My name is Matthew.
And Matthew, how old are you?
I'm 13.
Okay, and my other grandson?
Hi, my name's Jacob.
And how old are you, Jacob?
8.
Okay, so we come down here a lot, but we don't camp. Yeah, we stay at my son's house, my grandson's dad, and we're with his family. But we really use the road trek a lot, and I thought maybe it'd be good to have these guys tell you what they like about it. Now, you guys don't camp, right?
No, we don't.
No, you don't camp. Don't you want to camp?
Yeah, I really want to camp.
But your dad, he doesn't like to camp.
No.
His idea of camping is a 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
You know, on the beach, right?
Yep.
Oh, well, that's not a bad idea, but anyway, you're missing a lot. But you come with me, right?
Of course.
You'll come camping with me, all right. But how do you use a little Class B motorhome like this? How can this be handy for you, Jacob? You play a lot of sports. That's how one way we use it. Talk about it.
Well, we can go to my sporting games, tournaments, baseball tournaments. You can travel around the country.
We just sort of park this, and how do you use it?
Take down the couch and make it a bed.
You know how to do that?
Yes.
All right, let's show everybody how to do it. Well, they can't see it, but you can tell them how to do it. Tell them what you're doing and how you make it into a bed. What are you going to do?
I'm going to press a button, and it'll go all the way down as a bed.
All right. And look at that. That's a sofa in the back. Okay, go for it. There you go. That's making into a bed. All right. That's pretty good. Matthew, what do you like about traveling around a little Class B home like this?
Well, it's definitely got more room than our little car we take to Jacob's games and all the tournaments and stuff. Instead of being crammed up, we can go out and sit in the big chairs or sit down in the back with the seatbelts and watch some TV or watch DVDs and stuff. And after the games, definitely.
Yeah.
We always try to, it's always hot and we need stuff to drink and everything. So we go into the RV and there's a fridge who has Gatorades and water and Powerade and all that for the team. And
yeah,
we can go to the bathroom, definitely. That's a good thing.
Yeah. It has its own bathroom, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Jacob, remember when we had your whole team in here and we made popcorn?
Yep.
Yeah, well, don't do that again. It made a big mess.
All right.
All right, so you guys like this. And why, Jacob said something about traveling in the country. So you mean instead of taking your family car, you guys could all squeeze into the road trek, right?
Yeah, because we won't be all crammed up. We'll have lots of room. We'll be in the back that watch TV, like Matthew said, DVDs and all that.
And you can make it into a bed, take a nap?
Yep.
Yep, let everybody else drive. All right, there they are, my co-hosts for this little segment, two of my four grandsons, Jacob and Matthew. The other two, one's in college and one's practicing football, and we'll be going to his game and we'll have a tailgate party tonight, right?
Yep.
Yeah, we should probably bring the road trek.
There you go. I like the way you think, Matthew.
Well, there's our two grandsons. You all got a chance to meet them. We have actually four grandsons, four of them in Georgia. And then we have two granddaughters.
In Michigan.
Joining me now is Jennifer, the COO and the Chief Financial Officer of RoadTrekking.com. And the keeper of the books. And, you know, I've kidded before on the blog and as we've done appearances about your record keeping, but it really is a handy thing. You keep track of every cent we spend every day, right?
And I have for many, many years.
Yeah, for decades.
For decades.
So I thought it would be kind of fun to share just what we spent on this trip that we just did last week. We were gone 6 days And it was a fairly typical trip. We were going down to see the grandkids, as we've told you, and we spent one night going down on the road and one night coming back. So what does that cost in an RV, in a little RV like our Road Trek E-Trek? And Jennifer's got the numbers.
All right. We spent $365 on gas.
That was diesel gas. A little more expensive than regular gas, but that's not bad.
And we spent two nights camping out. We didn't need to do that, but we chose to. So we spent $65 on camping for two nights. And we spent about $180 on food. I did take food for a couple of lunches and a dinner. And, you know, we ate out a couple times and buying a few groceries. And we ate with our kids a couple times lunch and dinner. So $180 on food.
So if we wanted to have saved money, we could have obviously brought more food, right?
Yes.
And we did not have to camp out. We talked about that in the earlier section and how we prefer, you know, oftentimes we'll prefer a campground because we like to travel with our dog.
And we like the Kentucky Horse Park. And our dog likes the Kentucky Horse Park. We try to stop there whenever we can.
And it's important. I think one of the reasons we like this, we do stay in campgrounds when we could boondock if we want, is that the dog gets to go for a much nicer walk than in a Walmart parking lot. But if it's just the two of us, we've many times pulled over and stayed someplace free like that, and that's great. So there's ways to save. But the total cost then for this whole six-day trip was, what was the total cost of it all?
It was about $610.
$610. Now, if we had flown, you probably could have doubled that. If we took the family car, you know, there would have been a hotel room going down, and the hotel room is, I don't know.
What probably right around $100.
Yeah. $100, maybe even a little bit more. So,
and flying, we would have had to board our dog. We couldn't have taken him, and the grandkids do like seeing our dog. And the price of luggage and booking tickets, and then you want some flexibility. When we used to fly all the time to go see our grandkids or business trips, then something would come up and you'd want to change and you couldn't change. I love the flexibility of having the Road Trek. And if we decide we're not going to go one week, we can go the next week.
We've taken a couple of trips on video projects that we've done for various clients, and we've taken the family car, and that is, it's not very comfortable. We get this thing we like to pull in a rest area, and if you're tired, you just take a nap, and it's so much more comfortable in the RV.
That's true. And then we downsized. We got a smaller car, and I'm not quite sure that was a wise decision. Great for getting around town, but the long trips are a little harder.
That's one of the reasons we use the Road Trek as a second vehicle oftentimes as well. That's one of the nice things about having a Class B. So there you go. That's our total cost. We could have saved probably a little bit more if we did not buy diesel, if we had a gas RV, but I get about 15 to 16 miles an hour on the E-Trek. Diesels cost a little bit more. The reason I get 15, 16 instead of 18 to 20, which you get on some of the other similar Sprinter models, is we've got the E-Trek option and we have 8 batteries in that.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hi, this is Jane from Prince Edward Island. I'm looking for advice on replacement tires for our 2003 200 Popular. I see in your story about replacing wheel caps that you replaced the tires on your Sprinter with Michelin LTX M/S2. Those are actually the ones that we've been looking at and favoring. Were they a good choice for you? We intend to cross Canada, Prince Edward Island, to Port Moody, BC, in November, December, and we've told we need new tires. So we do need something reasonably good. How did your Michelins handle the trip you did last winter to northern Michigan?
We didn't have the Michelin tires last year. We went to northern Michigan, but as soon as we bought the tires, I could tell the difference in driving the vehicle. It was just so much nicer. Money well spent, those tires.
They're expensive. It's about $1,500. Now, in our case with the Sprinter, we have the dual rear wheels, so we needed the two for the front and four in the back. So $1,500 is not a little bit. They're guaranteed, though, till for, I think, 70,000 miles. So we have a long time that we can drive on those things. And as Jen said, we did not have the Michelins on last year. We had the regular Continentals, standard Continental tires, and they were fine. And we were in some pretty rough weather up there.
Yeah, we didn't have any problem whatsoever. Yeah. We just wanted new tires because we were doing the big trip out west. We're going to put a lot of miles on the road trek, and it was time.
Yep. We had about 55,000 miles on the Continentals, and so we decided since we're going to do a lot out west, we get the ones. The ones we have, by the way, the Michelin LTX MS2. And that was Jane's question. We thank you, Jane, for phoning that in on our leave a message link from the roadtrekking.com blog. We have a very similar question, but just a little bit different from another listener who asks this.
Hello, Mike and Jennifer. This is Armand. I have a question for you. What kind of tires do you use in the wintertime on your road trek? I was told that using winter tires in warm temperature is not recommended, yet driving around with regular tires in snow-covered or icy roads up north might be risky. So how do you solve that dilemma?
Okay, well, Jen, you've been driving it just as much as I do. What's your take on that? Have you noticed any difference in the winter and the summer?
No, I haven't noticed any difference whatsoever. And we were in some pretty nasty weather last year. We're not in Canada, so I don't know if their roads, I'm sure their roads are well cared for.
Yeah, we were in northern Minnesota, and we were in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and we had near whiteout conditions. I don't think you need to get snow tires on your RV. Now, I know some places out west do require them because of mountains. And I believe in Canada, there are some provinces that also require you to have snow tires. But if you can get by without them, I do not think you need them. I have now had 2 winters of driving the Sprinter in heavy snows. We were in a whiteout, I remember, one time along the shores of Lake Superior. And this thing was as stable as can be. And I just have nothing but good things to say about those tires.
And like you said, we weren't driving in mountains.
Yeah, mountains make a difference. I know, you know, you got to put chains on in many of the mountains out west. But Jennifer, your perspective on those Michelin, those new tires, we put those on just before we did that western trip. What did you notice when we took our first trip with them?
Smoother ride. It was much more comfortable, less bumps. It was just the comfort level.
Yep, there you go. Well, thank you much for those questions. And I want to remind you that you can also leave a question for us as simple as just going to roadtrekking.com.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question, leave a comment. Look on the right side of Mike's roadtrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Sponsoring this part of the Road Trekking RV podcast is Van City RV, serving RV shoppers from the center of the country in St. Louis, Missouri. Van City RV is one of America's top dealers, specializing only in Class B motorhomes from the major small motorhome manufacturers. They are in stock, they are on display, and Van City RV just loves to give you a deal, a special deal. They sell only Class Bs. The owner, Ray Dwyer, is the dean of Class B sales. Nobody knows small motorhomes better than Ray and his crew. They not only stock new models, they have a large inventory of used Class Bs as well, and they have a great fly and drive program. Shoppers from all over the U.S. choose Van City RV. Jennifer and I have been to Van City RV. We've met Ray and Dan and the crew, and they have one of the top service centers in the country. They have worked on our RV. They have done some great work there. We can personally attest to their skill and their expertise. Here's Dan with this week's special.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, I'd like to let all your listeners know out there that Van City RV is having an inventory reduction sale till the end of October. Take an additional $3,000 off the already discounted price of 13 and 14 models, and you can get all the information at vancityrv.com or call 1-800-467-3905.
That's 1-800-467-3905, Van City RV, where you'll always find the best Class B for you at the right price. And there are never any hidden fees. Check them out, vancityrv.com. And for special pricing, let them know you heard about them through roadtrekking.com.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
Everybody has an app, a favorite app for weather. And there are so many different weather apps out there that it's impossible for me to hit them all. I've tried them all. I like many of them, have about six different ones on my smartphone and tablet. But you may not know it, but I wonder if you have activated the emergency alert feature on your smartphone. Yep, you have that already built in. Almost all of the smartphones today automatically have the capability of receiving emergency weather alerts. You don't need a special app for that. It's built into your phone's functionality. What you do is you go to the settings part for your phone. And often on the iPhone, for example, it's settings and notifications. And that's where you set them. What you do is you want to activate those. You will then get emergency alerts, but your phone, of course, has to be turned on. Your carrier has specifics. You can check with Verizon, AT&T, whoever your carrier is. But when this is activated, you'll get warnings automatically as they're issued by authorities. And the system sends out also, by the way, Amber alerts. And in dire emergencies, presidential warnings. So check your phone, look under settings. What you want to have is emergency weather alert notifications turned on. It's somewhere there in settings. And the iPhone, you'll find it under settings and notifications. Android is pretty similar. And one other thing, people always are saying, what is your favorite app for weather? Well, I think my favorite app is MyRadar. I've got links to that on the roadtrekking.com blog. This is a free app, and all the major mobile platforms, iPhone, Android, Windows, BlackBerry, all of them have that. And it displays animated weather radar around your current location. You can then quickly zoom in and out and see what the weather is like coming your way. For $3.99, you can include weather warnings and alerts, and complete with push notifications to warn you of severe weather in your area. My Radar, it's a free app some places, but $3.99 if you want to have it also give you the weather warnings. But make sure you go back to that free emergency weather alert on your phone in your settings, check your settings and notifications, and make sure you have it turned on, and then you will automatically be notified.
Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, this comes to us from San Diego, and San Diego has recently enacted one of the tougher anti-RV parking regulations on the books anywhere. And to be fair to them, they've had quite a problem. Here's the problem. If you've ever been to San Diego, you know you can get to the beach just about anywhere. Mission Beach and San Diego from there north, it's just great. Pacific Beach, all those areas, all those little towns, wonderful places, and they've attracted a lot of RVs. And what happened is people would just sort of show up there with their RV, and they would park it at the curb right near the beach, and they'd stay there for days and ends. Maybe they'd move it every now and then because the only law before that was a state law that prevented cars from occupying the same parking spot for more than 72 hours. So people were just getting around. They'd park, they'd live in the thing, they'd take off, go to the beach, come back, and you know, within 72 hours, they'd move it. So the people got fed up with it, and they enacted a new law this year, and it just went into effect. And in the first few weeks of this, they have now issued something like 247 citations, all of those for a $100 ticket, and about 206 warnings, which every violator gets one warning before they get the $100 ticket. So if they wrote a citation without a warning, those people were warned twice. And the city has told oversized vehicle owners that 1,000 one-day permits that allow them to park overnight so they can prepare for trips and unload. You know, if you live in a residential area, they'll give you 1,000. There's 1,000 of those permits that they'll do, but it's clearly meant for locals who, you know, want to load up a trip and go. They're after the parkers, the tourists who come in with the RVs, and they apply to any RV that's longer than 27 feet long. And everybody who has a Class B like me said, yes, that gets us in there, because most Class Bs are about 24 feet, a little under that. Yeah, don't count it, because these guys are smart, whoever wrote the law. It's also if your RV is more than 7 feet tall. So 27 feet long or 7 feet tall, and you're stuck there. You cannot park your RV on city streets and use it to go to the beach and hang out and use it all that time. So anyway, it's a new law, and the tickets are flying. They're expecting there'll be some sort of a backlash, probably in next year. These regulations were listed to go into effect until August of 2016, and then they're going to evaluate it and see how they've worked out. But San Diego and their regulations, people are getting ticketed. It's a $100 fine, and that can kind of keep you pretty much, well, it's going to be going to another community if you want to enjoy it. I think you can park in some parking lots for a couple hours as long as it's not too big. Class Bs are, you know, you're going to probably get away with most of it. Nobody's going to measure it unless it's a huge thing with big satellite dish on. Then they're going to know. But Class As, Class Cs, not so welcome anymore in San Diego.
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com. The Small Motorhome RV travel blog. Travel blog.
You ever wonder what it would be like if you could just drop everything and hit the road, do your job from the road, but be able to live in your RV and see the country and well, just like live a normal life except in your RV without having to come back to a sticks and bricks place all the time? Working from the road, is it possible? Well, joining us now in this edition of Road Trekking the Podcast is Vanessa Fox. And Vanessa is... okay, I'm going to try and do this correctly so we all know it. She's a search engine optimization consultant, a blogger. She's an author. Actually, she is a goddess in the search engine optimization and marketing world. Everybody in that field knows her, but probably most of you RVers are saying, what is a search engine optimization? And what it does is it makes it easy to find your blog. We'll kind of go there. She joins us on the line, and what she's doing is just what I said, traveling the country. You can explain it better than I can, Vanessa. How did this happen, and what do you travel in?
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, I came on this idea just totally randomly. So it's such a huge, you know, like, difference from the way you would normally live. Now that I look at it, I'm kind of surprised that I've made such a big change. But it's working out great. So... I work all the time. I own a software company. I do a lot of consulting. I do a lot of writing, you know, as you mentioned, but I also travel all the time because I do a lot of speaking events or meeting with clients or whatever. So I'm always on the road. And so I'm always in airplanes all the time, and I actually hate to fly a lot. So I feel like where I really got this idea was from, Madden, you know, the Madden cruiser.
Yeah. He hated to fly too. Yeah.
And he always had to travel, you know, so eventually got his big bus. So, I kind of just had this idea that I'd love to travel, and I'm always flying, and I'm otherwise at home working pretty much from the time I get up, from the time I go to bed. And so I just had this idea, what if I got an RV and that was my home? And so even if I was working a lot, I could see the country and, you know, see all these little out of the way places that you just aren't going to see ordinarily, even when I'm traveling for work, right? I'm not going to see these little towns and, you know, all these different little things. And so I started to like research if there was even an RV possible that wasn't scary to drive, you know,
like a Madden mobile, yeah.
Right? That I could actually maneuver around. And that's when I came across Road Trex. And so I just have a little 170, which is perfect for me. I'm just one person. So I started out at the beginning of July. So it hasn't actually been that long, but I've been on the road since then. And I've put about, gosh, maybe 8,500 miles on it already. And, yeah, I still work every day, pretty much all day long, and I still run my software company, and I, you know, meet with clients and all that, but I'm doing it, you know, every day. I just wake up in a different little town or a large town or whatever and see the world.
Now, where do you still have a sticks and bricks place someplace?
I don't actually right now. All my stuff's in storage. I had been remodeling a house, and so that's ostensibly still in progress. But all my stuff's in storage, and I don't actually have a livable dwelling other than the road trek.
Where is home for you normally when you before you took off on the road?
The Pacific Northwest, Seattle.
Okay. So yeah. You are a coffee addict. I know that. Yeah. Then I can see that. I'm following some of her stuff that she started on her travels with a neat little blog, girlmeetsroad.com. I'll put a
That's
link.
Right.
I'll put a link on the episode notes here for this podcast. But and she has a great post that you put up a couple of days ago of your 170 popular road trek RV, and it shows the interior. People want to know, how do you get along in the van?
That's the biggest thing people ask, right? Is everyone wants to know. They can't visualize it at all, right? They just can't imagine that I actually have my entire house in this little van. So I finally did this post because I just kept being asked about it all the time.
So what is it like? Now, you are a single woman out on the road.
Yes.
What's the best part of it? What's the worst part of it?
And there are both best and worst parts. Although I would say on the whole, there's definitely many more best parts than worst parts. The best thing is just that I'm so independent and can just go anywhere I want. Like every day, I don't really have a plan. Like I have things, like I might have a client meeting that's maybe 2 weeks away or a speaking event. You know, I have to eventually get somewhere. But from day to day, I don't really have a plan and I don't chart it out in advance that much. I just wake up in the morning, kind of see how I feel. So that's been one of the best parts, is that I've just been able to, you know, one day I'm in a little town that just has kind of cool stuff. And another day, maybe I'm camping at the beach and, you know, I can watch the waves and come in and, you know, just kind of do whatever I want. Meeting interesting people, just sort of seeing things about America that, you know, I just wouldn't ordinarily see. So that's really the best. The worst part, honestly, is just that it can be frustrating, right? There are certainly places where there's no internet and no cell service and there's no coffee shop, no library, nothing. And you end up driving and you're just like, what am I doing? I'm driving in the middle of nowhere.
What's worse, being without internet or being without coffee?
I'm never without coffee. I have so many contingency plans for coffee that I will be able to make coffee no matter where I am and what's going on.
So being out of touch is always a problem. And I find the same thing. In our travels over the last couple of years, there's only a few places, and usually you can drive and ask the locals. They'll say, well, if you go up to that hill, you can get a cell signal. That's what I do. But
yes.
Have you ever camped or done RV travel before this?
Never.
What was it like that first night?
Well, that's the thing, is I didn't know what it would be like. I was like, I hadn't really thought it through, I don't think. And actually, the first night I did my first post is about this, is that I had read that there's this parking lot in a mall in Eugene, Oregon, where you can park right on the river for two nights, right in the parking lot. And I was going to be driving right by there. And I thought, well, I should start. I didn't even start the first night at a campground or an RV park. I started in this parking lot. And then I kind of thought, oh my gosh, am I going to be scared in this parking lot? Is it going to be cold? Like, I did not think this at all. But it turns out I've loved it. Some nights it's better for me. It just depends on the situation where I want an RV park. Other nights it's like, I just want a Walmart or I just want a truck stop. And I've found that, I really like all of them in various ways, you know?
So you work out of the RV, but I read on your blog, you also try and visit a coffee shop or some kind of an office, a library. And is that part of the experience as well, seeing all the country?
That's totally a part of the experience. And actually, that's sort of one of the best parts about it, is that instead of just being, you know, at home or something, working all day, it kind of forces me to get out and kind of seeing, you know, I have a real interest in kind of the work that I do in the evolution of our culture and how we interact online and how we start companies and, you know, opportunities that are available to people in parts of, you know, the United States that aren't, say, San Francisco or something. And so for me, it's been great to get out and see, okay, I'm in this little town. If I lived here, like, what access would I have to things? And so going to different libraries is great. Coffee shops, cafes, you know, so, and I, you know, can kind of meet people and kind of see what's happening outside my little bubble. Cause you sort of start to get this idea, especially on the West Coast, that everyone has access to all the same opportunities. And they don't actually.
Where's the strangest place you've been?
Oh my gosh, the strangest place I've been. That is a good question. I mean, I've been to a lot of strange places. I mean, it's weird to be in Kansas where there aren't any people aren't any towns, and all of a sudden there's like a hipster coffee place in the middle of nowhere that's a great place to go. I think the truck stops are very interesting. which I love the truck stops, actually, and I love the showers at truck stops. They're like the most luxurious things, but it's this world that people, they don't even know it exists at all.
And it's a world that forms a new city every night. Same with many of the different RV parks. I mean, it's 11 o'clock, it's empty, and then there's a whole new town with all new residents that come through the night.
And you just have no idea. Like this weekend, I was at a truck stop, and there are all these guys there watching the football game, and it was just like this whole little community back in the back of a truck stop that people drive by and it's like invisible to them, you know?
Now, people who are listening to this are going to raise a question you raised right at the beginning about safety. Have you ever had any worries about your safety out there on the road?
You know, I was certainly worried about that when I started. I have not been worried for my safety at all, which isn't to say that, you know, there aren't dangers out there. But on the whole, it's very safe, actually. And the time I write about this on the blog, actually, the times that I've been scared for my life have been times when I've been at a campground that there's no one else there. Right. And it's like pitch black because there aren't any lights and you're in the middle of the woods and there's no danger at all. Right. It's totally just this like horror movie fake fear. And I've been more scared there than anywhere else. There's been a couple times that I've like been at a Walmart, for instance, and there's no one else there and something happened. I actually wrote a post about this as well, where it just felt sketchy. And so I was just, you know, I'm not going to get a good night's sleep. If it feels sketchy, I'm just going to go someplace else, even though I'm sure that there's nothing wrong. And so that's just what I do, you know?
So most of the fears are certainly unwarranted, but now, how long are you going to keep this up? I know you're in Washington, D.C. now as we talk, and how long will you be on the road like this?
I don't know. It's, you know, because I really don't have any plans at all. I'm actually really loving it. And so the next couple of months, at least, I have kind of planned out on going up towards Boston, and then I'm going to head back towards the West Coast and see my sister and my niece again, who live down near Los Angeles. So that's going to take up the next, you know, until at least probably the end of the year.
What I'm hearing from you is freedom.
Yes.
Freedom. How about the stress level? You are admittedly a type A.
Yes.
I can relate to that. And like me, I think you have found a way to earn a living, and it's doing something you really like, but that doesn't mean you don't work really hard.
Right.
How do you handle the stress level? You talked about that on some of your other blog posts that I've read, that you are certainly compulsive.
Yes.
And now on the road, it adds a couple of different elements. Is there less stress or more?
That's an interesting question because it does a little bit of both, right? There's certainly more stress in, you know, you always have to find a place where you can work, even if that's in your RV in a Walmart parking lot, right? I mean, it could be anywhere. If I have a conference call or something, you know, there are these additional stresses that you would not have if you were at home and just sort of in an office or in the same place all the time. So there is a sort of added level of complication, but on the other hand, it has been such a great way to force me out of my habits, right? Because habits are very hard to change unless there's a disruption. And so I definitely feel less stressed overall, just in terms of getting that habit disrupted where, you know, I'm taking more, you know, breaks, I'm going outside, I have time to think about stuff while I'm driving. Like, it's definitely added those things in where they tell you to do anyway, but they're just easy not to do in terms of brakes and outside. I mean, going outside, I mean, that's kind of a big one for me.
That's a very big one. Well, last thing I want to ask, because it's also sort of your specialty with internet and search and
yeah.
where people go is community, the online community. And you,
yes.
I know, are now a part of our Road Trekking Facebook group.
I love it.
Isn't it amazing how that has developed? We didn't plan that out. It just happened.
Yeah, and I've actually found that to be an interesting, you know, because like you say, my background and what I do, I've found it, I not only enjoy interacting just on a personal level, but from the outside, it's interesting to watch it because that the community is so active. Like, you don't get that very often where there are so many people and it's so active and people really want to help each other. And you even have, you know, people from, you know, the company who come in and answer questions sometimes, which, you know, is great of them. You know, they obviously don't have to do that. And so I found it just to be amazing. I mean, I think that people who have these Rodham trucks, you know, maybe are, you know, sort of, you know, like to get out there and be independent and do stuff, but then also help each other. It just seems to be really reflected in that community.
It's an interesting experience for me. I did not expect it to be as compelling as it is. And that people come from all different backgrounds. I mean, we have, you know, such a polarized country that we live in. And yet in this RV community, the political differences, the religious difficulties, all those things are put aside on the thing
yeah.
that shares us.
Because everyone's kind of interested in the same thing. You know, I actually met someone from the group at one of the campgrounds I was at.
You'll meet a lot more.
It was amazing. So he was like, wait, are you Vanessa who has that blog who posted on the Facebook group?
I was like, there you go.
Yeah.
Famous in a whole new way. Well, girlmeetsroad.com is Vanessa's website, and you'll find her also on our Facebook group. If you're not a member of that, you can come be a part of it. And I head to her blog, and you'll see a tour of her 170 Road Trek Popular. And Vanessa, we'll check in with you maybe around Christmas time and see where you are. And,
yeah,
and I look forward to meeting you out there as well.
Yeah, me too. And thanks for having me on.
All right, Vanessa Fox.
What's on your RV bucket list? Maybe the place Mike has for you now on this week's Road Trekking Destination of the Week.
Well, we want to take you to the state of Colorado this week, and a place I bet a lot of folks have not heard of, the Black Canyon of the Gunnison. Probably not on a lot of your bucket list, but it should be. Invariably, the Black Canyon of the Gunnison, people compare that to its more famous big brother, the Grand Canyon, and the concept is the same. Grand Canyon's deeper. It's like 6,000 feet deep, I think, and it's longer, almost 300 miles, but the Black Canyon of the Gunnison is an amazing tourist attraction for RVers that is often overlooked because it is not surrounded by highly commercialized parks and campgrounds that cater to the big box type A RVs. There are a few campsites at Black Canyon of the Gunnison that have electricity, and they're on Loop B, by the way, if you do some checking. And that's where we stayed last time we were there. There are no flush toilets there. There's no water hookups, no dump stations. But that's the beauty of these small motorhomes. You are pretty well self-contained there. To get there, you have to drive a pretty steep mountain road off Highway 50 east of Montrose, Colorado. There's no cell service. There's no Wi-Fi or internet. You got to drive into Montrose to get that. But we were thrilled by our stay there. It's an incredible place, a very deep and sheer canyon with plunging cliffs, soaring buttresses, and a thundering river down at the bottom. And a place called Warner Point, which is its deepest. It's about 2,722 feet deep. It stretches 48 miles across southern Colorado. And you really do want to check it out. I've got some great photos for you to take a look at. You'll find those all on our roadtrekking.com website. But if you have never been to the Black Canyon of the Gunnison, or if you have, you want to go back again because it is a really fantastic place. The Black Canyon of the Gunnison, roadtrekking.com. I'll have a post with the show notes from this episode.
North America in a Class B motorhome.
This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
Well, there is episode number 3 in the proverbial can, and we had a great time with it. I want to thank Vanessa Fox for a great interview, and you can find her information, the destination of the week, our tech review, all the things we talked about, links to them on the show notes that accompany this with the blog post at roadtrekking.com. Don't forget, you can send us a question or a comment. We love to hear from listeners, and you'll hear your comments on a future episode. So use the send voicemail link at roadtrekking.com, and we'll get them, and we'll incorporate perhaps your voice in the next episode. Till then, I'm Mike Wendland. We'll see you out there, as it says, road trekking.